Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Edward Snowden to Brian Williams. I am a patriot.
How can it be said that this harmed the country when all three branches of government have made reforms as a result of it?
Also today, Alan Alda and Brian Greene on the World Science Festival, including Paul Rudd reading Einstein's letters on stage.
Dear Dolly, in a row I had a good idea for investigating the way in which a body's relative motion with respect to the luminiferous ether affects the velocity of the propagation of light in transparent bodies. Take care of yourself.
So it's Snowden and Einstein today, and Rod Diggs. Is this music art or evidence in a murder trial? The question of when music lyrics and videos can be taken literally and used to convict the authors is being hashed out in courtrooms across the country and right now in the trial that's underway in federal district court in Brooklyn, where Ronald Horan, a.k.a. Rod Diggs the rapper, is on trial as a gang leader and murderer. Joining me to talk about this case and the larger debate is Stephanie Clifford, a Metro reporter for The New York Times. Stephanie, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
And I know you're at the courtroom. I'll ask you to give us an update in a bit. But who is Ronald Horan for the uninitiated, and what is he accused of?
So he is a rapper who's also known as Rod Diggs. He is on trial here in a racketeering trial. So he's accused of quite a number of things, including three murders, being a gang member, gun possession. And the interesting thing here, as you mentioned, is that he is a rapper, and he's got all of these rap lyrics that talk about gun possession, murder, being a member of a gang.
And that actual clip that we played is now evidence in his trial?
Yeah. The judge decided that he would allow some of these rap lyrics to be introduced as evidence, which was a somewhat controversial decision. The defense says that this guy's an artist, that he builds up a profile of himself as sort of a tough guy persona, and that's the conventions of the rap genre. You know, the government, which is prosecuting the case, says that these show proof that he's part of this gang, that he's done all these criminal activities, and that they can use that as evidence.
And he's got other lyrics like, "Twice I went head-to-head with Charles Hines's office, the Brooklyn DA, and never lost, I'm a boss." So that's another one that they say is evidence that he did something. We'll come back to that in a minute. But anyone from the Gowanus houses happen to be listening and want to call in about Ronald Horan's place in your community? Because he's accused of basically orchestrating a reign of terror in the Gowanus houses. Is that your experience? Something less? Anyone want to call in on this case and this person's actual place in the world of Gowanus houses and around there in Brooklyn, or this question of when art can be used as evidence? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Stephanie Clifford at the Ronald Horan racketeering and murder trial at federal court in Brooklyn right now. That lyric, Stephanie, "Twice I went head-to-head with Charles Hines's office and never lost, I'm a boss," it's supposed to refer to the fact that prosecutors had witnesses in a prior murder trial of his, but they failed to testify?
That's right. He was brought to trial in state court a few years ago on a murder charge, and he was acquitted of that murder charge after two of the witnesses who were supposed to show up didn't. One of those witnesses is now testifying in this federal trial. He was the first witness that the government brought, and there was actually a scene in the courtroom where the judge threatened to clear the courtroom after some of the people in the gallery were apparently making faces at him and making threatening gestures.
In this case, just the other day, right?
In this case, yep.
What happened there? What exactly happened?
So this witness who had been, he was supposed to testify in this trial several years ago where Horan got off, on the murder charge. He didn't show up. And 2 days ago, he appeared in this federal trial and talked about how he had been scared that Haran would go after him. That's why he didn't show up in the earlier trial. But the gallery has been filled with Haran's friends and family, and the judge put a stop to the trial and unusually threatened to clear the courtroom, said, nobody's going to be eyeballing my witnesses from the gallery. Like, stop. Stop trying to intimidate this guy, essentially.
Now, the argument against the use of rap lyrics as any kind of evidence is that it's at least threefold. One, judges and juries don't understand the gangsta rap world.
Right.
Two, how bragging and marketing are different from actually committing a crime. And three, these lyrics sometimes reflect urban realities more than they say, I did this to another human being. How close
right.
does he come in any of these lyrics to say, I committed this crime against X individual?
I think their strongest piece of evidence, the government's strongest piece of evidence, is a lyric that says, I beat the body. And that, even under the conventions of rap, suggests I was not convicted on a murder charge.
Was that a tweet? I think I read that that's a tweet. I don't know if
that
was even
that
a song
a
lyric.
It's unclear. The government hasn't said specifically which are lyrics and which are other sort of public postings.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see as the trial unfolds.
Let's take... go ahead. Did you want to finish a thought?
No, go ahead.
Well, I want to take our first phone call, and it's going to be Andrew in Manhattan. Andrew, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Ryan, love the show.
Thank you.
Just want to make a brief statement that I think, first of all, I have no hip-hop background. I have no legal background. And I know little about this case, but
Then you're qualified to call talk radio. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I think it's very dangerous to introduce First Amendment issues into a criminal case. And we can all recall the dead Kennedys in the 80s were accused of, you know, distributing obscene matter to minors with an H.R. Giger masterpiece. And in that trial, which was basically a war of attrition financially, I think that it's just a terrible precedent to set. The context doesn't matter.
To use any artist's lyrics as representing something factual from their lives.
Exactly.
Andrew, thank you very much. Anyone else? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.
And if I could jump in on his point, the judge in this case pointed out that Haran is not on trial on a First Amendment case. His rap music is not being examined. And the judge found that the First Amendment doesn't prohibit, you know, the use of political speech or public art to prove involvement in a crime.
If somebody stood up and was giving a political speech per se and said, I believe in policy X and policy Y, and oh, by the way, I shot John Kennedy.
Right.
Then the First Amendment doesn't protect him from having that used as evidence in a murder trial.
Right. You know, I think he wanted to strike a note of caution, which is that if it's just about somebody's abstract beliefs when there's no bearing to the issue being tried, then it becomes crossing a line. But here he felt that the lyrics at least may show Haran's involvement in this gang and his criminal activity.
So let's look at other such cases, because it's interesting that this is not some outlying case all by itself. There are other recent and current cases, one of which might make it to the Supreme Court soon, that are kind of related. So, for example, to judge from crime shows, this has been going on for a long time and includes not just gangster rap, but the Narco Corrida songs from the U.S.-Mexican border. You familiar with those?
A little, yeah.
And the New Jersey Supreme Court is deciding whether rap lyrics should have been used to convict Vontae Skinner in a shooting. In that trial, the prosecutor read the jury lyrics composed before the crime took place, And those lyrics did not refer specifically to any victim. Are you familiar with that case?
I am. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
So this was a case in New Jersey, and the defense lawyers, at least, felt that the prosecutor went way too far. He read 13 pages of lyrics to the jury. All of them were composed before the shooting. None of them mentioned details of the crime. None of them mentioned the victims because, of course, they were composed before the shooting. And they felt that this was prejudicial, that this just goes to make the jury believe that this is a violent guy, and that the jury doesn't generally understand the conventions of rap music, and that this is a pretty violent genre and has some upsetting lyrics in it. Vontae Skinner was convicted of attempted murder and sentenced. The case was overturned, I believe. The conviction was overturned. And the New Jersey Supreme Court is currently deciding whether it should be retried, whether those lyrics were improperly used.
And there's another case that is considered likely to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the so-called Alanis case, where the argument is over whether Facebook posts styled as gangster rap lyrics constitute what's called a true threat. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, and here there was no sort of underlying crime that they were trying to prove. Here the crime itself was these Facebook posts. This was a guy who used Facebook to post what he argued were Eminem-style lyrics about killing school children, hurting the FBI, hurting his wife. And he was convicted on, I think the technical crime was transmitting threatening communications via the Internet. He's asking for a Supreme Court hearing, not more on a technicality, but he's arguing the jury was improperly instructed to consider whether they found these threats threatening. It should have been whether Alanis intended these as threats, which he's saying he didn't. He's saying he was just sort of mimicking Eminem, mimicking other rappers, and using the genre to express his frustration.
Are you familiar enough with that to cite any of the particular lyrics and how close they came, to an explicit threat? I'm going to blow up this and that shopping mall, or what did he write?
I think it was fairly explicit. It was, I'm going to slit the throat of this FBI agent. I'm going to do this to my wife.
That sounds pretty specific.
It is, but Eminem, if you look at Eminem's lyrics, they often talk about hurting his ex-wife and what he's going to do to her. He obviously was never prosecuted for that.
Joe's Mar in East Harlem. You're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
I just wanted to point out that even though we're talking about someone who's potentially a drug kingpin or someone that's very violent, that a lot of these tactics are also used for much younger and I would say less dangerous individuals. There's a NYPD operation called Crew Cut, the New York Times reported on last year. It's actually supported by Jumaane Williams and Brad Lander, who introduced legislation that was supposed to kind of cut back on stop and frisk. This operation has been called by some like the East Stop and Frisk, where cases are built against teenagers for their Facebook posts. So we're talking about 15, 16-year-old boys who are just, at that age when you're just saying things, there's a lot of bravado, and cases are being built against them, and they're criminalizing them for the rest of their lives. So even though we're talking about a gentleman who potentially is more dangerous and has a longer record, that it also extends down to younger, more vulnerable people who maybe are just saying things because that's part of street culture.
That's pretty interesting. Do you know any examples? Is it like, hey, meet me on the corner, I'm going to pick up that bag, or what kind of stuff?
Well,
there's one example. I'll jump in.
Stephanie, go ahead. You've reported on this?
Yeah, I'll jump in with one example that I just heard about, which was a kid posting on Facebook. He was being investigated as part of, the police thought he was a gang member. He posted on Facebook, hey, I just bought a G-Shock. They use that as evidence. So they said that he had bought a gun. And in fact, a G-Shock is a watch. And so it can be misinterpreted really easily, I think. And that's one of the dangers with these Facebook and social media monitoring campaigns, is that the police can sometimes not understand the terms and not understand what the kids are talking about.
Thanks for pointing that out, Josmar. E-stop and frisk. That's interesting. We'll have to do a separate follow-up segment on that. So thanks for calling. And Alan in Brooklyn has an instance from history.
Situation reminds me of a report about the John Hinckley trial about 30 years ago. And supposedly when they were trying to decide in the jury room.
That's the guy who shot President Reagan, right?
Some jurors asked the judge if they could give him a dictionary because they wanted to know whether poetry was defined as fact or fiction. And, of course, the judge found that totally irrelevant to actually finding whether or not he was insane because the definition wouldn't conclude anything for them. But it was the same sort of attempt to mix law and art in ways that don't always work.
Because he had written some poetry, and that's the guy who shot President Reagan.
Right. He had written poetry, and it clearly sounded insane. So the question was, if the poetry was meant to be insane, because that's what poetry is, then therefore he was sane. But if poetry is supposed to be sane, and it sounded insane, that meant he was insane. And the judge obviously found that was an irrelevant inquiry, so he didn't answer their question.
I think I saw that scene in The Wizard of Oz. Alan, thank you. Thank you very much. So I guess there's all kinds of precedents and kind of historical and current analogies, Stephanie Clifford from the New York Times, to what's going on in the Rod Diggs trial in Brooklyn right now, at least on the music part of it.
Yeah, to some degree, although I think poetry is more an exception. Poetry as a genre is not, you know, you're not really generally writing violent lyrics. You're not writing about potential crimes. And I think that's why there's a lot of debate around allowing rap lyrics as evidence in trials, because you know, generally these juries don't understand that the writers of these lyrics are writing boastful things, and they're writing to sort of amp up their what defense lawyers at least say is a fictional persona.
So
this trial, the judge is actually going to allow a linguistics professor, to talk a little bit about how the genre works and what some of the conventions are, in an attempt to sort of get the jury to understand the other side of this.
Now, this whole debate about whether these lyrics and these songs should be admitted as evidence in his racketeering and murder trial took place before the trial actually began. These were pre-trial motions, right? And now the trial has begun. So how's that going?
It's an interesting trial. It's a really packed courtroom. He has a lot of supporters. They're coming daily. They've set up an extra metal detector outside of the courtroom, which is something I haven't seen before.
Who are his? Let me ask you to characterize his supporters, because some of the reporting I've seen on his alleged crimes makes him sound like he leads a reign of terror or has led a reign of terror at the Gowanus houses, and when he was first taken off the streets a few years ago, if I'm not mistaken, that things got better there, safer there. So what's your sense of the actual context of the community that he's involved with and who his supporters would be and who's afraid of him?
The witnesses certainly seem a little afraid of him. These are generally guys who were on the streets with him, who also grew up in the projects, who now are being who got in trouble for some other things, and who generally are being offered deals by the feds in order to testify.
Uh-huh.
But there's a sense of real trepidation among the witnesses. You know, one said that this guy who testified 2 days ago, who said he'd seen Haran shooting and killing another man, said he went to Queens, I think, and never came back to the Gowanus houses because he was so scared of Haran. His supporters are, you know, it's a lot of young guys, a lot of women, I think some family members, some friends. It's hard to tell what their affiliation is.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you're outside the courtroom right now, is that right? What's happening today?
Yeah, today is more that the prosecution is putting on its case, trying to show that he was involved in these three separate murders along with all of these racketeering charges. It's a 21-count indictment, so they have quite a lot to prove. The defense's argument so far has been, or strategy so far, I should say, has been to try to point out that these witnesses have a reason for testifying, that they're being offered better prison deals, essentially, and that their stories don't necessarily line up. They say that Haran grew up in pretty tough circumstances in the Gowanus houses. His mother had drug problems. His father had drug problems. But when he went to jail a few years ago on, I believe, a drug charge, he kind of changed his life, and he came out determined to be a rap star, put long hours in at work, and really tried to cultivate this Rod Diggs persona. So they say he's a changed man.
Stephanie Clifford, Metro reporter for the New York Times at Federal District Court in Brooklyn, covering the Ronald Horan, or Raw Diggs, murder and racketeering trial. We posted a few of his rap videos on our site if you want to get a taste of the kind of thing that he puts out. And, of course, one of the issues is the use of some of his music as evidence against him on these criminal charges. Stephanie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Snowden makes his case to Brian Williams, Obama to West Point cadets. We'll sample from both.